You are listening to A Good Book on Sun Sounds of Arizona.
Kirin's The Spell of Noan, written and narrated by James D. Priest.
Chapter 19. Spekeren aroused the others shortly after daybreak, and they sat up, leaving dreams behind to face reality. Blinking, they looked at the old magician. He spoke solemnly.
There has been no sign of Jilin. However, I have a plan. Arise and gather food. I will explain it while we eat.
Again the ravens cawed loudly, and everyone listened for a reply, but heard nothing. Deliani dispatched the Eilon to locate food for themselves. Hutt and Tally entered the damp woods to find breakfast for the Kirins. With the youngsters occupied, Spekeren discussed his ideas with Deliani, and she concurred. Not wanting to risk disagreement, however, he didn't mention the first step he wanted to take. When Hutt and Tally returned, all sat near the fire. Spekeren's voice was grave as he presented a surprising proposal.
Before any other attempt at locating Jilin, I wish to try the Calamar.
With tremulous fingers, he withdrew it from his pack. The others, including Deliani, looked at him quizzically. Hutt knew that both Jilin and Spekeren had Calamars. The magician had shown his in his apartment, but Hutt didn't know Spekeren had it with him. "If you brought it," said the lad, "why didn't you use it yesterday?" Spekeren knew this was coming and tried to answer without revealing all his fears. He cleared his throat. "A Calamar is a very capricious device. I have been reluctant to use it, probably to a fault. I haven't used it for years, and I'm not certain I have the knowledge or power to bring it to life, to say nothing of finding Jilin. But I must try. For reasons only I may know, I must be alone. I want all of you to leave, and I must not know where you go. You know how long it takes to walk between our clan trees at home, Rogalanon and Rogustan. Leave now and stay away for the length of time it would take to walk that distance, then return here." The others were reluctant to depart, but yielded to his wishes. Led by Deliani, they and their Eilon lifted off, leaving the magician with his Calamar, Osalam, standing nearby. Sitting by the waning fire, Spekeren took the magical instrument in both hands, which shook slightly as he gazed into it. "I've neglected you," he thought, "and Jilin doesn't know much about Olaman's Calamar. Nevertheless, let's get on with it." Despite what he had told the others, he was quite sure how to make it work. He wanted to be alone because he was afraid someone might be harmed. His lack of exposure to the Calamar, coupled with the frightful changes in the world, made him uncertain what would happen when he unleashed the device's complex capabilities. It could result in his finding Jilin. It might bring no success, or it could lead to something unpredictably damaging. Thus, as uncomfortable as it was to be separated from the others, he sent them away and did not watch where they went. "If anyone will be harmed by this instrument's unchecked powers," he thought, "it will be me and me alone." Now he concentrated on the gleaming Calamar and then looked into the glowing fire. "Tabilan ve Norsulo," he said in a low voice. The device began to warm, and when he looked into it again, its opacity was clearing. He wished to see Jilin and concentrated exclusively on the lost lad. The device's central portion became transparent. It flickered and vague images appeared, but nothing he could identify. Multiple scenes took shape, coming into focus for an instant, only to be replaced by another. Nothing was familiar, the picture changing over and over as he stared with trepidation into the heart of the instrument. Then the dizzying succession ceased, and a raven standing by a small fire came into view. Spekeren studied the bird. "Loana," he thought excitedly, having learned to recognize each raven.
But there's no sign of Jilin. Of course, he's invisible. Even this device might not be able to unshroud him, but he must be nearby.
Jilin, lad, can you hear me? He asked.
But it was too late. The bird's heartening image wavered and lost clarity, and another likeness became superimposed over it as if trying to take precedence. Soon the raven was blotted out, the new image taking over completely. To Spekeren's horror, now occupying the Calamar's core, was the smooth, unmistakable outline of a Granum's head. Unknown to Spekeren or the party led by Deliani, a Granum was close to where Deliani's party had landed and was waiting. The creature had been stalking Tali from afar and was surprised and gratified to sense its prey being delivered nearer at hand. The victim wasn't close enough, however, for the beast to become frenzied and release its involuntary wave of warning. Noting the change in its quarry's position, it began its methodical tracking afresh. Then, through uncanny telepathic abilities, the Granum became aware of something else. Yet another Kirin, somewhere nearby, was attempting to communicate with a Kirin already affected by Granums, which attracted its attention immediately. The preternatural creature stopped in its tracks to listen and interpret. Coming through a magical medium was a transmission the Granum could readily intercept and was now deciphering and comprehending. As it sifted through the information, not only could it understand what the message said and to whom it was intended, but it could grasp intimate and vital details about the sender. Learning the transmitting Kirin was familiar with the one the beast was seeking, it homed in on Spekeren to extract from him everything it could about its prey, the uncaptured Kirin with the knowledge. An amorphous menace flowed into Spekeren's mind. Before he could resist, it was probing him deeply. He could feel it delving and searching, as if seeking a specific area of his brain or a particular kind of information. Alarmed and far from certain what was happening, he found that, strangely enough, he could still carry on the process of thinking. He deduced that something foul had intruded through the Calamar, that bringing the device to life cleared a telepathic channel to him and opened a window to his consciousness and memory and his entire mind. He also sensed that, through no desire of his own, his hands were gripping the Calamar ever more tightly. In the beginning, he felt defenseless and naked, his very core and self being violated by an evil force and under a scrutiny he had no power to oppose. All at once he sensed an alteration. The initial probing had been unproductive, the desired purpose not achieved, and the assault took a different turn. The presence within him seemed to become calm and quiet, as if willing to wait. He sensed it lurking near the center of his consciousness. Then it prodded him, gently, with hints and inducements, to initiate a train of thought about a fellow Kirin, one very close to him, a traveling companion who possessed critical knowledge. Recognizing its purpose, the magician fought the insidious invader. Avoiding any thoughts of Tali, realizing this was what the fiend coveted and was awaiting, he labored against the unyielding thing's will and found himself locked in a deadly confrontation. He resisted all the urges and impulses from the monster to reveal anything about his companion, and in fact led the creature into memories and emotional sensations about other friends and acquaintances. The intruder wasn't fooled and was not to be denied. This tactic aroused it, and soon its patience wore thin. It became more overtly persuasive, then aggressive, and eventually loud, as its requests for data were denied over and over.
Demanding the desired information, it raised such a clamor and din within Speckeren's mind that he felt his head would split open. To his despair, he knew he couldn't combat the creature's overwhelming will much longer, and it would soon gain sway. But somehow, through the increasing uproar, he remembered the calamar. The thing was invading through the device. His only hope was to break contact. With every fiber of his being, he tried to loosen his grip on the instrument. The creature sensed this immediately, and the burgeoning noise stopped, suddenly and completely, as its attention was attracted to a new cerebral arena. A mute battle was now being waged in the motor portion of Speckeren's brain, the area controlling the movement of his body, the nerves, muscles, and tendons of his extremities. As he strove to extend the fingers of both hands, the monster sought grimly to counter this and to make his grip ever tighter. For a time, a silent standoff existed, neither yielding. But gradually, Speckeren gained a slight measure of control, and his fingers began to loosen. In this area, it seemed, he might be stronger than his opponent. His confidence building, he achieved even further dominance, and against a last burst of will from the intruder, he forced his clenched hands open. The calamar, so hot it was burning his skin, dropped to the ground and the conflict ceased. Reeling backward to the earth, Speckeren was stunned and breathless. He tried to collect his scattered thoughts, at first to no avail. Then things began to fall into place. He remembered who he was, and where he was, and the dreadful assault he had endured. He knew these creatures possessed telepathic abilities, but never suspected communication through the calamar might alert, even enhance, those abilities, and the creatures might home in on him and assault him. Yet that was precisely what happened. "I knew this could be a hazardous business," he thought, "but it was far worse than I anticipated." Throughout the engagement, he didn't know Tally's location and was deeply thankful for that. "Had I known," he thought with a shudder, "the initial probing would probably have revealed it and might have motivated the creature even further." Sending the others away also meant Tally wasn't nearby during the attack. Had she been, the fiend might have sensed she was there, and through the calamar aimed its vile intent toward her. But he felt and hoped he had interrupted the Inquisition before any significant information was gleaned. "I must never use the wretched instrument again," he said, struggling to a sitting position. He looked down at the calamar, once again opaque and inactive. He remained by the fire, gradually recovering his composure, until Deliani and the others landed. "What happened?" she called, running to him. Kneeling at his side, she noted the strain on his face. "Have you been harmed in any way?" "I think not. I hope not," he said, as she helped him to his feet. Dignified as always, he brushed off his yellow gown and cleared his throat. "Communication with the calamar was unsatisfactory." Stopping there, he revealed nothing more, despite questions from his companions. He didn't want to cause concern, especially for Tally, regarding the creature. Knowing something had gone horribly wrong, Deliani said nothing further, but resolved she would try to prevent the magician from ever using the calamar again. "My first strategy to locate Jilin failed miserably," Speckeren told himself, "and nearly ended in disaster. I hope the second is better." "We can no longer stay here and wait for Jilin," he said, suspecting Agronom was nearby. "He is alone and might be injured or bewildered. We must go in search of him. But because of yesterday's tragedy, I do not want us to be separated. We will proceed toward the place where Deliani thinks we lost Jilin, where we turned south and headed for these trees. At that point, assuming we can find it, things might look very different on a sunny day than a stormy one. We will fly a circular route, gradually widening our pattern, staying close to the ground, searching for Loana. We have 8 sharp eyes among us, and unless she's hidden, we'll find her. If I know Jilin, he'll follow his woodsmanship instruction from his elders. when lost and alone, remain close to the point where you discovered you were lost. Wandering afield will diminish the chance of searchers finding you. What if he decides to go looking for us, asked Hutt, and finds this fire and campsite and no one here? Can we leave him a sign? Excellent point, little one, said the magician. We mustn't tarry, but we'll take time for that. Kirins use Ruvan's verbal form at special gatherings and when conversing with Kirins who don't speak the same local dialect. The full written configuration is usually known only to magicians, but a primitive form is learned by all Kirins. A simple, symbolic rendering of ancient words and phrases, it can be made with natural objects and is used to leave directions and warnings or point out features of the terrain or locale. If such a communication were come across by humans, it would have no meaning for them. Get ready to depart, said Spekeren, and I will create a message for Jilin stating, should he happen upon this place, he must remain here until we return. But first he bent over and looked at the Calamar, opaque and gleaming at his feet. Reaching down, he touched it lightly with a finger. It was cool. He forced himself to feel it, then grasp it and pick it up. He stood up and slid it unceremoniously into his pack. He spent a brief time examining the twigs and sticks near the now-spent fire, then ventured into nearby brush, found suitable stones, and broke off several small branches with leaves still attached. On a mossy, open area near the fire, he arranged the objects into a pattern. Using triangles, crosses, and other shapes, he skillfully prepared the communication, then stood back to review his work. The others, eager to leave and glad they were finally doing something to find their missing friend, came to view the message. Jilin Nedsam Root Wanyam Ut Ilan Serpoden, read the magician under his breath. That will suffice, he said aloud. He'll not mistake the meaning. Let us depart and carefully mark our way. We must be certain we can find this place again. Deliani checked the fire. It had smoldered its last and was out. The Kirins mounted their Ilan and departed to the north, the Granum having not appeared. Spekeren in the lead, they had flown only briefly when suddenly Farallon began quaking and shuddering so furiously that Tali was nearly thrown off. Her arms and long feet clenched tenaciously around the giant bird's neck. Through effort, she remained astride the shaking creature. But his flying capabilities were disrupted, and he was losing altitude precipitously. Tali held on tightly, and when the bird was about to strike the ground, the violent activity ceased as abruptly as it had started, and she was able to glide him to a normal landing. Stunned, the other three Kirins flew down quickly and alighted near her, asking whether she was harmed and what happened. Spekeren turned to Deliani. Could it have been a seizure? Tali answered. No, but I know what it was. I felt the same sensation when the Granum discovered us by Oleman's grave. The ground shook as violently as Farallon did, and I had the same feeling of being naked and exposed. She glanced at Spekeren. We can't stay here. We must escape. Farallon, quickly into the air. The bird lifted off and gained altitude rapidly, the others following closely. Still climbing, Tali began searching the skies in every direction for something she hoped never to see. The others, not knowing what she was searching for, looked frantically also. There! Cried Deliani, pointing. They all stared. To their abhorrence, there they were, on the northern horizon. Still at a distance but approaching wildly were two foreign beings with the same face and head, smooth and featureless, as possessed by Granums. The creatures had an erratic mechanism of flight the Kirins had never before seen. On each were two pairs of stubby wings, one at the torso's front, the other at the rear. The four wings beat in no unified fashion, each apparently autonomous, yet the things not only remained aloft, but were moving in the Kirin's direction at an astonishing rate of speed. Volodans! Cried Tali, terrified. We must hurry! Called Spekeren, presuming these were the winged counterparts of Granum's. Turning his raven, he commanded the greatest velocity possible. The others did the same, and in moments the four birds, tallies in the lead, were fleeing the approaching menace at top speed. With Ocelam's dark wings undulating faster than ever before, Spekeren glanced rearward. He estimated the creatures were no longer closing the gap. The party was maintaining a uniform distance between themselves and their adversaries. "They must behave in a fashion similar to Granum's," thought Spekeren, "with the notable exception that they can fly. Jilin is missing. They seek Tali." The separation between the party and their trackers was sustained to the magician's satisfaction for a considerable period of time. But despite every effort, they couldn't increase their lead. Eventually, when he glanced back, it was obvious the monsters were gaining. Noting this also, Deliani pulled her Eilon over to his. "Should they continue advancing," she said, "we will have to defend Tali." "None of us has seen a Volodon before," thought Spekeren. "Even the dead Olamon never had. In challenging them, we have nothing to go on but courage and intuition, and I hope more than a little luck." The chasers were beginning to overtake the flagging ravens. Like Granum's, they were single-minded, tireless, and without pity in approaching a quarry. The pale Tali clung grimly to her raven's neck, knowing she alone was their victim. In her agony, she nearly gave up hope. But the others didn't, their minds working faster the closer the beasts came. Flying to the rear of Tali's raven, Hutt hoped to decoy them and attract their vile attention. Like Granum's, they ignored him, as they did the other Kirans and their Eilon, homing in only on the one they sought. As the lead attacker was passing, Hutt unsheathed his blade, raising it high overhead. Recognizing immediately that this Kiran was protecting its quarry, the creature veered quickly sideways, colliding with Hutt's raven and sending the bird off course. Several moments ahead of its companion, the first Volodon was nearly upon Tali and concentrating on her alone, when Deliani swerved her Eilon toward it, leaned in its direction, and thrust her knife ferociously into the back of its smooth head. To her pleasure, a crude darkness exuded therefrom. The thing turned toward her. Beginning to descend, it clutched at her with primitive claws, dragging the brave Kiran and her Eilon downward. The second Volodon was almost within striking distance of Tali. Spekeren's raven was exhausted and had dropped back. But the magician had witnessed Deliani's courageous actions and was searching frantically through his bag. Tali veered to the side, evading her attacker and giving him a few vital moments. From his kit, he withdrew a long, slim, silver instrument created in the days of ancient magic. He had never used it, but held it high overhead. "Te lasses obilan," he cried. A bolt of yellow energy spanned the distance between the gleaming device's tip and the rear of the beast's head. A claw's breadth from its victim, the creature stiffened and rotated in the air as its wings ceased to beat. Then it plummeted toward the earth, motionless as it fell. Resting herself from the other's desperate grasp, Deliani watched it too descend toward the ground. Flying to the magician's side, she found him unharmed and hurried to Tali. Hutt was already there, reassuring her that the attackers were gone and she was safe. "For the moment," uttered the girl, quivering, "others will come." As their anxieties subsided and they slowed in flight, Spekeren examined the landscape below and had a sickening realization. Trying to escape the Volodons, they had flown madly for he knew not how long, nor how far, nor in which direction. For all he knew, they had gone in circles. Searching the terrain for recognizable landmarks, he found none. He had no notion where the campsite was, nor where they thought they had separated from Jilin. To his great dismay, he now had no idea where the missing lad might be.
Kirans, The Spell of Noan, written and narrated by James D. Priest.
To learn more about Kirans, Visit www.kiranbooks.com.
You have been listening to A Good Book on Sun Sounds of Arizona.